Good morning, everyone. A lot of subjects you'll want to be a part of this morning at The Takeaway, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. We're talking about Edgar Allan Poe, and the narrative of race in the United States with an author of an interesting new novel. But first to Libya and to Senator John McCain, who thinks a no-fly zone over Libya is a good idea and easy as pie.
Declaration of a no-fly zone to the enemy would be have a significant deterring effect on their desire to fly. I think we know that to be the case.
But not necessarily so confident as Defense Secretary Robert Gates or Joint Chiefs of Staff Admiral Mike Mullen, U.S. Central Command General James Mattis. They appeared before the Secretary, before Congress, and were wary of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's comments this week that imposing a no-flight zone over Libya was under active consideration. What did General Mattis have to say?
My military opinion is, sir, it would be challenging. You would have to remove the air defense capability in order to establish the no-fly zone. So just no illusions here. It would be a military operation. It wouldn't simply be telling people not to fly airplanes.
Joining us now is Joshua Keating, associate editor of Foreign Policy magazine. He's on the line from Washington, D.C. Joshua, good morning.
Thanks. Good morning.
And Benjamin Barber, author of Strong Democracy and Jihad versus McWorld. He's also a senior fellow at Demos in New York, a U.S. think tank. He also joins us from New York. Benjamin, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Joshua and Benjamin, we'll begin with you, Joshua. Is a no-fly zone a military operation, as Central Command General Mattis seems to think?
Yes, absolutely. And the obviously a very large one. Libya is a huge country, and this can require hundreds of planes at a time when resources are stretched pretty thin in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it appears yesterday, based on statements by the Russian foreign minister, that they're not going to approve it, which means there won't be significant approval. And France and also Turkey, so they probably wouldn't approve it in NATO without a Security Council resolution. So this means the U.S. would essentially have to go it alone, and I think that's probably a pretty unlikely option at this point.
Benjamin Barber, do you believe that a no-fly zone would constitute essentially opening a third front in a Middle East war in Libya to create a no-fly zone over that country?
Well, I think that's the least of it. It would certainly do that because it would mean taking out ground defenses, many of which are in and around populated areas. So it might also mean hitting civilian casualties, the very thing we'd be trying to avoid. But more importantly than that, it would set a terrible precedent in that the United States and Britain, which seem the only people at this point with any interest in doing this, it will be vetoed in the Security Council by Russia and China if they try to do it. But if we do it alone, it sets the precedent of the United States involving itself in these legitimate local protests and uprisings in ways that could actually discredit them. I mean, people like Gaddafi have been saying that this is foreign-inspired. We know that not to be the case, but what better way to give him some credibility than to intervene from the outside and let him say now he's fighting again a war against the United States, as happened in the 1980s when Tripoli was bombed and his headquarters were demolished and his daughter was killed.
So you're sort of describing the kind of a Black Hawk Down scenario, if that there would be a plane that falls over Libya, or if there would be significant civilian casualties over Libya, that Gaddafi could make much sort of propaganda advantage out of that. But there's also the precedent of the world standing by if we're looking at the situation in the Kurds in 91, when there was no no-fly zone over northern Iraq, and Saddam Hussein was able to push civilians with his gunships in full view of the international community back across the Turkish border.
Well, there's no evidence that's happening right now. I mean, a few planes flew early and destroyed some depots, and there are some reports of airplanes and helicopters being used against civilians, which is horrendous enough. But in recent days, we've seen very little of that. It's not airstrikes or military planes that are keeping Gaddafi in power. It's his ability to control Tripoli through his sons, through his militia, and through terrorizing the local population. And as I say, having aircraft over the area would simply give him credibility without actually doing much to damage his ability to control things on the ground. If this is to succeed and not simply fall into a civil war, which is a great danger, then the people on the ground in Libya, as in other parts of the region, have to do this themselves. And even in Benghazi, they have have made very clear, a number of the rebels have, that they don't wish to see a U.S. military presence. There's some division. Some have called for airstrikes, but only under U.N. supervision and authorization, and that's not going to happen.
Benjamin Barber is the author of Strong Democracy and Jihad versus McWorld. We're talking about a no-fly zone over Libya. Joshua Keating, associate editor of Foreign Policy Magazine. Does a no-fly zone or the attempt to create one over Libya push the country closer to civil war or restrain the dynamics of civil war?
Well, it's important to remember a no-fly zone doesn't essentially prevent atrocities from being committed on the ground. The Srebrenica massacre in Yugoslavia in 1995 happened while the UN had a no-fly zone imposed on the Serbian Air Force. And Saddam Hussein managed to stay in power for over 10 years and continue, maybe not as much in northern Iraq, but in southern Iraq, committing human rights abuses against the Shiite population while a no-fly zone was in effect. So it's certainly possible that this conflict can continue for a long time and perhaps even be frozen in place by the imposition of a no-fly zone.
Well, it sounds to me the takeaway here is that when Hillary Clinton uses, the Secretary of State uses the words no-fly zone to talk about options we're considering, it's purely talk. It's just something to say that sounds good, but it has absolutely no sort of practical benefit. Joshua?
Right. I think a no-fly zone could partially tip the military balance. It might make sense as part of a larger package of sanctions, but in and of itself, it's not a panacea.
Joshua Keating, thanks so much. Associate editor of Foreign Policy Magazine. Benjamin Barber, a final thought?
Yeah, just quickly to say, already we're seeing in Yemen President Saleh blaming Israel. There's a lot of folks who would like to blame the West or Israel on these things. We know that's not the case, but let's not give them further evidence that makes such stupid and absurd claims credible by intervening militarily. They need humanitarian help. We should be doing that. They need our diplomatic support. We should be doing that. But to get involved militarily in ways that could drag us into another war and actually discredit the rebels is, I think, a very bad idea.
All right. He's a senior fellow at Demos, a think tank in New York. Benjamin Barber is the author of Strong Democracy and Jihad versus McWorld. Thanks so much. Talking about a no-fly zone in Libya.